From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour will be made in just a few weeks when thousands of college students go back to campus. In Western New York, most colleges and universities will reopen in some fashion. All institutions closed for on-campus learning this past March when the pandemic first hit. Students will return to dorms and quads and classrooms less than 6 months later in very different circumstances. Every university is different. Every plan is a little bit different. Some students will have to prepare for more remote learning. Some will have different professors. Students might have questions about whether they're expected to get tested or where they can go if they test positive for the coronavirus. On-campus learning is a complex challenge in the age of COVID. We welcome four college presidents to explain their plans. We've spoken with several of them before on this program, but since this is an evolving situation and we're closer to the start of the fall semester, we wanted to hear from them again to discuss any updates and also hear some new perspectives. My guests for this hour include Dr. Beth Paul, the president of Nazareth College. Welcome to you, Dr. Paul, and welcome to Rochester.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And you started July 1st, is that correct?
I did, a little over a month in.
Well, you certainly have your hands full, as do our other guests. So our kudos to everyone joining us today. And that also includes Dr. Dina Porterfield, the president of Roberts Wesleyan College and Northeastern Seminary. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Catherine Douglas is joining us again. She's the interim president of Monroe Community College. Welcome back.
Thank you, Megan. A pleasure to be here.
And Dr. Mark Zupan is joining us again. He's the president of Alfred University. Welcome, Dr. Zupan.
Thank you, Megan. Pleasure to be here.
We have a lot to talk about this hour, and listeners, I know that you have been sending your questions in already for our guests, so we'll get to those this hour as well. But let's start by understanding whether students are coming back to campus and class full-time at these institutions and what that looks like. And I'll start with Dr. Paul. Are students returning to what might essentially be called normal life at Nazareth?
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to share our plans. We have such deep commitment to our students, to their health and well-being, but also to their learning. And we've been working so hard over the last few months to find ways to continue with the kind of education we provide, which is a very in-person, personal kind of education. So we are opening our campus starting on August 17th. Our new semester will begin, and we are welcoming our students, faculty, and staff back to campus. It will be in different ways, you know, so we will be engaging people in all different ways, and those include some in-person learning opportunities. They also include some opportunities that use technology in various ways. And then because our campus is so involved with the community, we also have students who are learning in various community settings. So yes, we are reopening campus and very soon and excited to welcome students back, but there will be some things that are very different. Obviously, we'll have thinned out spaces, so we will have lower capacity in our classrooms and other common areas on campus. We will be using outdoor spaces much more often. We will also have some tents put up so that we have some additional spaces to use. And obviously, practicing all of the behaviors that I have learned in New York as someone who has moved here from out of state recently are much more commonly used up here than in some other parts of the country, and we're really grateful for that. So certainly the requirement of face coverings and other important health behaviors. So a little different, but we are continuing with the kind of education that we value here.
Dr. Paul, what are some of those community settings that you mentioned? Are you referring to internships or co-ops, or are these learning opportunities in different buildings around town? What are those?
We have a lot of community partners. So we have programs in all sorts of areas. But for example, in our health programs, we have students really all over the city working with various community partners in providing resources to our community, services to our community. And so we are continuing with those kinds of very important learning experiences. In those experiences, our students have to apply our own standards for health and healthy behaviors, but also adhere to the standards that are set up by the community agency. So in many cases, those students will be required to do more COVID testing so that we make sure that there is safety and security for the students, but also for the community agency and the citizens that the students will be working with.
I'll have some additional questions about testing in just a few minutes. That's something that our listeners have asked about in particular. But before we get to that, Dr. Porterfield, I'll go to you next. What does normal life look like on campus at Roberts Wesleyan and Northeastern Seminary in the fall, knowing that the term normal is changing
right.
every day?
Right. What is normal these days?
Right.
Thank you, Megan. Well, we are planning to welcome students back and begin classes on August 24th. And as you know, we have not only traditional undergraduate students, but non-traditional students and graduate students as well at the college and the seminary. And so classes will begin the 24th. We have been bringing faculty and staff back to campus following all of the protocols set forth by New York State and by the county, and making sure that we have things in place and that it's functioning well before the students arrive. And so we have been preparing that, and I'm back in the office for the first time since this has begun. I've been in this week. This is my third day. It's wonderful to be back on campus and to begin the protocols that are needed. I think as far as education, to deliver a Roberts and Northeastern education that we believe is very transformational and holistic in its approach, we have offered to our students, specifically at the traditional undergraduate level, if they would like to remain or go virtual and remain virtual as they did at the end of the semester, or come back face-to-face. And that is the student and family choice. And so at this point, and we have less than 10% of our students that have said they want to stay virtual. But as you know, things change every day in family experiences. And as you get closer, we're seeing a few people make those changes back and forth, either deciding they want to come face-to-face or otherwise. But we have put into place all of the expectations by the county and New York State and the requirements as far as distancing. Masks will be a high priority on our campus in addition to the 6-foot rule and 50% capacity. We've removed desks from classrooms. We've modified schedules, so a portion of the student class will come one day and then be virtual on the other, and another half will come another day, making sure faculty have the different tools and the face shields that they need, putting shields in any area where students have and faculty and staff have interaction, and just making sure that the protocols are followed. And like I said, we're in that practice phase of seeing, you know, how's it working with faculty and staff as we begin to come back so that we can be on target for when the students return. And as you know, we are very fortunate as a state to be on the lower level of concerns related to the number of cases, and yet it doesn't mean that we're out of the woods in any way. And so we have to be as diligent as we have been when we were virtual when students come back.
Thank you. Dr. Douglas, same question for MCC. What does life look like on campus or remotely for MCC students?
Well, Megan, many of the things that my colleague presidents have mentioned are the same things that we're doing here at MCC. We begin classes on August 26th, but we are welcoming about 50% capacity of our residence hall students. They'll begin here on Monday, August 10th. They'll have a staggered 2-week move-in period. And again, it's about 50%, and we're leaving one of our halls completely empty to be available for any isolation or quarantine cases as the semester unfolds. One other thing that hasn't been mentioned that we'll be using is technology. One of the things that we're doing as employees or students come onto campus, there's a single point of entry, and there's a self-assessment tool in order to have the daily health screening that will be required for anyone coming on campus. And that will be possible to be done through your phone on an app so that we can minimize any kind of density at that single point of entry, and not have people exposed in long lines or anything like that. We're also looking forward to we did all of the hand washing, the masks, all of that is part of our plan that was approved by the State University of New York, and we've entered into a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Public Health for Monroe County in terms of we abide by all of their guidelines. And one of the things that we have done, in addition to the other things mentioned here, is we've upgraded all of our dual air filtration systems to include 13 filters. So those are the same kind of filtration and ventilation systems that are used in hospitals, and we're pleased to be able to provide that additional support for our employees and students.
Dr. Zupan, same question for Alfred University. What does campus look like in the fall for you?
Megan, our tagline is outside of ordinary, and these are truly outside of ordinary times. We are seeking to get back to the old norm to whatever extent possible. I have yet to run into one of our students who said they like the new norm that they experienced in the spring better than the old norm. So we're anticipating about 50% of our classes will be old norm in person, 25% will be hybrid, so half the time you'll be coming in person, half the time through technology, and then 25% will be fully online. We've had to create a portfolio partly to protect faculty staff, so 65 years and older underlying conditions, we've been able to accommodate requests from our faculty to teach online, and at the same time we needed online capacity because we have students coming, we initially anticipated from 45 different countries, and so a number of them can't travel here, can't get visas, so we needed a portfolio to get them started with the Alfred University education and then be able to join us with the spring semester. We're starting classes on August 24th. We're actually welcoming our first students today and later this week because certain of them are coming from travel advisory states. Certain of them are able to come from an international location, giving them the requisite 14 days of quarantine. If the state specifies. And the other twist we've added recently is the first 2 weeks of classes will be fully online, just so we level set everybody and get them in the right protocols, the daily screening, the masking, the social distancing, to provide that extra layer of assurance and safety. We're doing a lot of stuff outdoors. Our rural location here in Allegheny County helps. Usually the positive testing rate is 0%. We want to make sure we keep it that way. So things like badminton, soccer, golf, this combination of soccer, golf, how do we use the tennis courts for maybe golf, physical education, practice? How do we reimagine in these outside of ordinary times? The last two things, we're in the business of making connections. Higher ed is with ideas, with other people, and we've got to balance the connection to ideas this year with making sure we keep everybody healthy and safe. And last thing, and one of my colleagues mentioned this before, the importance of each of us to be able to preserve the old norm. Each of us in the community has to commit to undertaking certain key responsibilities. So we're having each of our students attest on a site, on our website, that they're going to protect the Lux, our mottos, fiat Lux, or let there be light, that they're going to be responsible for upholding it because none of us wants to go back to the new norm that we experienced in the spring.
What kind of monitoring will there be for that? It sounds like that's some kind of student code of conduct. If a student is reported for not following those protocols, what kind of monitoring or, I don't want to say punishment, will there be, but what kind of action will be taken if you find that students are not following the protocols?
We're going to follow our student conduct process, very much take the educational approach, using resident assistants that live with our students in our residence halls, with our staff in our wellness center, with our staff in student affairs. Each student before 10 a.m. Is required to file a daily screening, a variety of different questions, a temperature check, and it's either 10 a.m. or before they come to an earlier class. If they don't complete that daily survey, our wellness center gets alerted, our student affairs, and the faculty member who's teaching the class. And we've been working with our faculty and our provost, Beth Ann Dobie, on let's say somebody doesn't want to wear a mask. What protocols in the class do you take to make sure everybody remains safe?
Will a student be removed from class if they're not wearing a mask?
We're adopting, yes.
Okay, that was a short answer. Okay, thank you. It's very clear. I'll ask the other presidents the same question. Dr. Paul, if students are not following the protocol that is set by Nazareth, if they're not wearing masks, if they're not following directions, what kind of monitoring and actions will be taken?
Very similar to what my colleague just mentioned at Alfred. Very similar protocols. We're very much trying to take the approach of education and that it really fits in with the values of our community. We are a community that cares about one another and that takes personal responsibility but also shared responsibility. So we too have a pledge that our students are going to sign prior to coming in. We also have the daily screening process that everyone experiences as they're coming in. And then the addition from what has been said is we also have a set of students that are being trained as public health ambassadors. And they're going to be peer mentors to their students, trying to keep front and center in everyone's minds that the degree to which we take our responsibility for ourselves as well as our community very seriously is the degree to which we will be successful as we move forward. And so they are planning all sorts of efforts to communicate, but also to support one another and call out positive behaviors on campus so that we can motivate a good, positive, supportive community.
A listener on Twitter had a question. I'll direct this to Dr. Porterfield. He said, what's being done to stop students from doing what students inevitably do when class is over? Protective measures on campus will mean nothing if kids go party at the weekend.
Correct. So some of the things that we are asking our students to do is to stay near campus and to make different choices. Now, we do have at Roberts, as many people know, as a faith-based institution, we have some expectations about lifestyle. Doesn't mean they don't happen, but it does mean that there's an expectation already regarding drinking and that type of party and activity. So we're going to hold to the expectations that we have, but we're also going to make sure that students are very aware of where they're going. So we have a commuter population, so what does that look like for the students who go home and come back? And then for those that are residential, making sure that they live in community and they live within their family experience of what that is for accountability. And we have student conduct policies already in place for behaviors that are outside of the expectations at Roberts. And so we will continue to follow those. But we are going to reinforce that activity outside of campus has an impact on activity on campus, right? Meaning we are responsible for each other. So just like my colleagues mentioned, using student leadership, our RAs, our student government, student life, and making sure people understand what it means to be a part of a community. You've been at home protecting your family unit at your house. Roberts is now your family unit. And so how do we protect ourselves as a community to make sure that we help not only Robertson Northeastern, but we help Monroe County and the greater state of New York?
That's something that one of our listeners also brought up, that this issue is not just about protecting people on college campuses, but the greater Rochester Finger Lakes community as well. And when I look at an institution like MCC, which is probably seeing a higher commuter population than a residential population, Dr. Douglas, do you think that asking students to maintain, you know, to adhere to the protocols both on and off campus is more difficult for you than a college that may have more, that may have a higher residential population?
Well, you're absolutely right, Megan. We certainly have a principally a commuter population, but that is true also of our employees. So both our employees and our students are as close to normal in terms of these days as possible. They come to work or they come to school and then they go home, or in the case of students, they often have a job. And so we're taking that same kind of education, college values-based approach, that we're making it clear what our expectations are, and that we're taking, remember when we all went to be tobacco-free campuses and we said that enforcement is for all of us, it's not any individual sector of our campus. It's not just public safety that has to enforce this new norm. And that's the approach we're taking with this. It's that, you know, this is something that we all have to enforce. We have to enforce it for our individual health. We have to enforce it for the ability of the college to move forward and do its job. And as members of our community, we need to keep our community safe. And so we anticipate that there'll be times that we have to work closely with folks to underscore what is our expectation. There are elements, for example, in our residential students that, you know, they sign what we're calling an attestation, where they sign and say, this is how I have lived, you know, these last 24 hours. And they do that every day. And so we will be taking that combination of educational approach and that values-based approach, that we are part of the community and our community's health is at stake. So we need to be responsible about this.
If a student is not wearing a mask in the classroom, will they be removed from the classroom?
We will first work with the educational approach and try and do classroom management approach. But yes, if indeed in the final analysis they refuse to wear their mask, they will be removed from campus, yes.
Mm-hmm. Just 128, so roughly 4% of the nation's thousands of colleges have announced plans to hold classes solely online. That's according to data gathered by Davidson College. Just looking at the University of California, Berkeley, in the last couple of weeks, they decided they'll start fully online. Chancellor Carol Kreis said, quote, "After weeks of developing a very elaborate plan for a hybrid model in the fall, we decided after we had a serious fraternity outbreak that it was just too risky to teach face-to-face," end quote. So they are starting fully online. We'll see how things go from there. But I'll ask each of our guests, did you ever consider going fully remote for the semester, online only for the semester? Dr. Porterfield.
Yes. So we considered everything, and we surveyed students and had panels with students and families and trying to ask questions that said, okay, what is the experience that students are looking for? What is the experience of Roberts Wesleyan College and Northeastern Seminary? We've been doing online since the 90s. So it's not a question of can we do online, and we were able to convert to that fairly quickly. It's a question of the experience. Now, you also have to understand that there are some programs based on New York State requirements that that are going to require some face-to-face so that we have the healthcare professionals that we're going to need for the future, right? So it became a question of what programs, what students, and what does that look like? And we decided that we would offer both and that students could make that choice, students and families. And so that's what we've done. And like I mentioned earlier, less than 10% have said they want to remain virtual for varying reasons, and there's no justification a student has to give. And as we're getting closer to the start, students are making different choices and families are making different choices. So our only request is that once you commit to virtual or face-to-face, then you have to stay in that pattern for the semester. You can't move back and forth so that we can make sure that we move forward in a safe environment.
Dr. Paul, same question. Did you ever consider going fully remote for the semester?
I suspect, like my colleagues, we have considered every possible permutation. And in fact, I think that's partly the intelligence that I think we've all brought to this is that we need to be nimble. We need to be very flexible. The words I would use about Nazareth is we're unstoppable. And in order to be unstoppable, we have to be flexible. We have to be able to pivot and respond to whatever conditions we are given. And we were given quite significant and severe conditions back in the mid-spring. So we've considered all different scenarios. And we heard loud and clear when we queried our students and families, we heard loud and clear that what they value about the education at Nazareth is people. What they value is the very personalized, holistic education that we offer here and the deep sense of community that is the really the foundation of our education. And so we have been working very hard to define a way that we could continue with that kind of learning. Like all of my colleagues, we watch on a very frequent basis, I would say more than daily. We watch what's happening in our area. We're really very fortunate to be in an area where the incidence is low and where public compliance with healthy behaviors has been relatively high. And so we feel very fortunate for that. We are ready to make whatever change we need to make to keep the education going, but we're optimistic and hopeful that we will be able to put into place this plan that we have developed that will support our students in an in-person environment.
I think this is a type of situation where it's going to be evolving every day. You know, nothing about the situation has been consistent, and there will be criticism on both sides. No matter what decision institutions are making, what families are making, what students are making, everyone's in a different place. And I'd like to ask Dr. Zupan this question that comes from the New York Times. Susan Dynarski, she's a professor of education, public policy, and economics at the University of Michigan. She wrote about how the decisions at campuses are being influenced. She said, quote, "Many college administrators rightly fear they will lose students to their competitors if they don't hold out the promise of in-person classes, which means opening their campuses. This creates what in economics we call an immense coordination problem. The first colleges to announce that they are teaching entirely online will risk a plunge in enrollment and tuition revenue, so relatively few have been willing to do so," end quote. Basically, she's saying decisions to come back to campus are being driven by money. Do you agree with that characterization, Dr. Zupan?
First and foremost, we've been guided by health. We want to maintain a safe campus. And then at the same time, like my colleague said earlier, overwhelmingly, our students and their families prefer the old norm to the new norm. In normal years, I'm on the road half the time meeting with alumni for fundraising purposes. And when you ask them what they cherish the most about their Alfred University experience, is that somebody took an interest in me and changed my life. So very small, personalized approach, helping people to identify their passions and then nurturing that passion. So we want to preserve that as much as possible. We know it works. We want to get back to it as much as possible. But at the same time, we have to have new safety protocols. And we need a mix because certain students, we had an interesting thing happen 2 weeks ago where a student launched a change.org petition. Please be fully online. The person has some underlying health conditions and got some fellow students to join. But soon thereafter, some other students started a change.org petition with the exact opposite plea, be fully in person because that's what we treasure the most. And by and large, that second petition, the lion's share of our students would prefer the old norm, and that's why we're trying to preserve that pedagogical approach.
With 50% of classes in person, 50% or 25% fully online, 25% hybrid, as you mentioned, and then 50% in person, is tuition the same for all of those options?
Right now, tuition is the same, but we're giving people the choice. And what we're telling our students that can't get here from an overseas location or because they have an underlying health condition, the selection won't be as broad, but we'll work with you on an individual advising basis what the best portfolio of classes. They won't pay room and board because they won't be with us, but we've also invested in creating these different options that the students can avail themselves based on their health conditions, as well as our faculty, staff, and wanting to make sure we ensure their health and safety.
Dr. Douglas, do you agree with Susan Dynarski's characterization that decisions to reopen in person are being driven by money?
Well, you know, I wouldn't say that that is a primary driver. Higher education is certainly a business, but first and foremost, it is about changing lives, transforming individuals and families and our communities. And so I agree with my colleagues that the absolute priority has been the health and safety of our employees and our students. And so at MCC, you know, we work closely with faculty. And their concern was there are certain courses that, in their professional estimation, simply cannot be delivered with academic integrity unless there is a face-to-face component. And so working closely with them, we've outlined, and there's really five types of delivery, pedagogical approaches that we'll be offering our students at MCC this year. And you know, I kid Megan that, you know, I drive over this Genesee River a lot on the bridges, like my colleague back in the office. And I want to make sure that the welders that repaired those bridges, that they actually did some welding and it wasn't all simulation. So our faculty have decided which are the courses that really require face-to-face for academic integrity. We're following the guidelines that were presented by our national organization, the American Association of Community Colleges. And so that we have that kind of face-to-face option, but we also have online. Have like my colleagues, MCC has been in the business of online delivery for well over 20 years, and we're actually the leader for SUNY Online in the community college sector. Our faculty are being incredibly innovative while they maintain their academic standards if they deliver remotely or remote hybrid, and we're actually looking at a different approach in the spring in terms of a hybrid flex. So again, we're looking for how do we maintain academic integrity of the delivery of our coursework to our students while keeping everybody safe.
There is certainly a lot for students and faculty and families to consider. And I want to ask each of our guests, if people would like to read more information or find your safety plans, where can they find them? Dr. Douglas, I'll start with you. Where can we find MCC's plan?
Go right onto our website, and there's an easy single click for COVID, and you can go on there. You can see not only a link to our full plan, but also additional resources are right online.
Great. Thank you. Dr. Zupan at Alfred University, where can we find Alfred University's plan?
Same, right online, and it's also you'll see a link for the daily screening for our employees as well as our students.
Thank you. Dr. Paul for Nazareth.
Same. We have our plan online. We also have a web page that includes additional information, including a very rich frequently asked questions session. You would not be surprised that we probably have gotten about 700 questions since all of this started, and we stay very active in providing up-to-date information.
And Dr. Porterfield at Roberts Wesleyan and Northeastern Seminary.
Yes, you can find it at roberts.edu at the top of the page. It's called Roberts Restart. It has questions and answers to everything that you could think, and we will be putting up the detailed plan this next week that people can see of what was submitted to New York State. But it's very detailed by section, by student population, by residential, by virtual, by classroom setting, academic expectations, all of those pieces.
Thank you. I see our listeners are starting to call in with their questions and email them, too. I have more questions about testing, about quarantine. We're tight on time, but we're going to do the best we can to get through as many of those questions as possible. My guests this hour talking about reopening colleges are Dr. Beth Paul, the president of Nazareth College, Dr. Dina Porterfield, president of Roberts Wesleyan College and Northeastern Seminary, Dr. Catherine Douglas, interim president of Monroe Community College, and Dr. Mark Zupan, president of Alfred University. We'll take a short break and your feedback next. Coming up in our second hour, we explore representation in American media. 21 years ago, the NAACP called for a boycott of the four major television networks. There were 26 new primetime shows that fall, and not a single prominent actor of color in those shows. How much has changed over the years? Our panel examines the landscape. I'm Megan Mack, sitting in for Evan Dawson today on Connections. We're talking about reopening colleges and universities in Western New York. We have a number of questions coming in about testing, so I'm going to do my best to summarize them and also ask some of my own. And heading into the summer, there were a lot of questions about whether students and staff would be required to be tested, either before heading back to campus or on a regular basis throughout the semester. Just this morning, the New York Post reported that students enrolled in New York's public colleges like SUNY Albany and Stony Brook would be required to test for required to have a coronavirus test and test negative before returning to campus. We emailed the SUNY system asking for some more information about that. I know SUNY Geneseo has a similar policy, but some other SUNY schools have not shared that information. Syracuse University is requiring testing in order to return to campus. So let's talk about each of the colleges represented on the program today. Dr. Douglas, what is the decision for testing for MCC students?
Well, Megan, it's a great question. And, you know, we are a SUNY school. And our plan was not only approved by SUNY, but by New York State. And it does not include individual testing. We really want to look to be able to enforce something that, implement something that we can enforce regularly. And also, in terms of the feedback from testing, you know, it only works when it is a rapid return on that information, and so you can follow up with the contact tracing. So we're only requiring our residential students to do testing. Our commuter students will use that self-assessment tool or answer the screening as they enter our single entry on every campus. And the daily health screening has proved effective for our employees who are back this summer. And also, we have a small group of students who we've welcomed back now, students who could not successfully complete their program in the spring because it needed a face-to-face component. And so that small group are completing their spring 20 courses now. We are following this protocol. We've had no issue. So we're confident that our approach is working, and it is all about keeping that that mask and positive health screening on campus.
Dr. Zupan, same question. Is regular testing required for students on campus, and is testing a negative test required to return to campus?
We were initially thinking of a PCR-based test and requiring it. The turnaround times, though, that have been mentioned, when it stretches to 2 to 14 days, that information becomes a lot less valuable. So right now we're requiring the daily screening protocol. We're also, with two area higher ed institutions, getting some equipment that will allow us to do antigen-based testing. That turnaround time is 15 to 20 minutes. The challenge with that is that 15 to 20% of the time, it's a false negative. especially when people are asymptomatic, but it'll provide an extra layer of insurance. And then as another measure, and Beth mentioned this earlier about the importance of being nimble, we have also been contacted recently by two different outfits seeking FDA approval that do pooled saliva-based tests. We're checking into how quick the turnaround time will be. It's less intrusive than the nasal pharyngeal test, but we're going to try to stay very nimble, and anything else we can add to protect the bubble for this fall and beyond, we're going to be engaging with.
Same question for Dr. Paul. Is regular testing required for Nazareth students on campus?
This is something that my colleagues and I have been, I think, constantly researching, and so much so that we feel like we might be getting a second degree in public health. It's a very difficult issue, and unfortunately, the availability of testing has limitations. As my colleague just mentioned, you know, when you get to the point where 5 to 7 days is the time in which the results come back, they really are not useful. So we have made the decision to not require blanket testing across all of our student body. We do have available quick return tests on campus so that if we have students that present as positive, we can test them quickly on campus so that we can either put them in isolation or get them to public health, to a health center to ascertain the next best options for them. So we do have a protocol in place for acting very quickly when we do have anyone presenting with symptomatology. We also will be using testing for some of our students who are in higher risk activities. So we have some athletics students who will be doing various practice activities, as well as the students I was mentioning before that will be interacting with different populations in the community. We will be requiring testing for them.
Thank you. And Dr. Porterfield, is testing required regularly at Roberts Wesleyan and Northeastern Seminary?
At this point, we are not requiring a test to return to campus, but like my colleagues, I will just say it is always under review, and we are doing research collectively as an institution and with the local institutions as well. I think the greatest challenge has been stated, the availability of test results in a timely manner to make a difference on your campus. So we are really depending on our daily health assessment that students and faculty and staff fill out every day before they can come into class or into interaction on campus. And we will be doing symptomatic testing, as many will be doing as well, and quarantining, having a quarantine space and isolation while we wait for results. But I think the key to this, and considering and reviewing pooled testing, there's mixed reviews on that as well. So I think the greatest challenge, as you know, and as we know, as individuals that live within our state and community, is that information changes regularly. And we're all seeking and searching for something that's concrete right now. And right now that could appear to be the testing until you dig down into the research and you realize that testing is only good for a certain period of time. And if you cannot get those results back, then you should have taken a different action. So we're going to use the actions of the daily assessment and symptomatic testing and continue to research the options. But I'll say honestly, I could change our opinion on that and decision tomorrow if some new information comes out and the speed of which we can get those returns changes.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned where students will go to isolate if they do test positive. What does that space look like? Is there a designated dorm or floor on campus? Where do they go?
Right. So we have designated some space for that already for quarantine and isolation. We would ask students, of course, that commute that they would stay home. And if students live locally, even if they live residential, we'll ask them to go home. But for those that don't have a space, we will have a space. If they end up without a location to go because of family members or high-risk population, then we have worked with a hotel and are going to have some opportunities that will be an additional charge for the student if they aren't able to be on campus or at their own home.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Douglas, same question. I know you mentioned earlier that there will be dorm space for students who need to isolate or quarantine. How many spaces are you anticipating might be needed? I know it's difficult to predict, but how many have been set aside? Perhaps that's the better question.
Well, we're setting aside an entire residence hall. So with social distancing, Megan, we could fit as many as 125, but we have no expectation that it will take that many. So again, like my colleagues, we will work with students if they, once they are symptomatic and tested, we would work with them to get them safely home first as an option, or then to stay in our residence hall. And we're confident, again, that we have put in place the protocols that will keep them safe. You know, we've actually never shut down our residence hall. In March, when we shut down the college, we had students, we had some international students that couldn't go home, and we had some foster youth who had aged out of the system and literally had nowhere to go. And so we've been housing students in our residence hall, a small number, 22 of them, all the way through this, and we've learned how to safely manage residence life in the age of COVID.
Thank you. Dr. Zupan, what is the protocol for where a person goes in case they test positive at Alfred University?
We have a separate residence hall set aside for quarantining individuals. If they're local or can access home, we'll also work with them to get them home and have the quarantine happen there. We've negotiated with several local hotels if we need added capacity there. And we're sending out an appeal later today to our alumni and friends. So if you want to help with a particular student for 2 weeks of quarantining, so where there's a burden financially that hits especially hard for a student and her or his family, we will try to ameliorate it.
Thank you. Let's get to some questions from our listeners who've been very patient on the phones. First up is Patty in Mendon. Go ahead, Patty.
Hi, Megan. This is not a question. This is a bit of a word of warning and hopefully some information for parents. I have a student going back to RIT. They are requiring a negative test, and they get sent us information about testing sites, a huge, you know, volume. Well, then when you start to call them, they say, oh, we're not taking non-symptomatic people. And it turns out that only the New York State DOH sites will test people who are not symptomatic. And there's only one around here, and that's the NCC drive-in lot, which is fine. Then my son called and he filled out a form. They said we only will make appointments 2 to 3 days in advance. So when he called to make an appointment for this week, they called him back and told him next Monday. So they're not following what they say they do, which is 2 to 3 days. And we waited, and now there's no appointment this week. So I finally called as the mama bear. And I said, look, tell them they have to wait, and then you say there's no appointments. And I had to dig and dig, and finally she came back and said, well, there is a DOH site in the Buffalo Sabres parking lot, and it's completely open. There are no appointments. You can have whenever you want, today, tomorrow, Friday, whatever you like. And parents, especially RIT, I don't know about other colleges that are looking for that, are going to come across all these roadblocks. I thought I'd show you the roadblocks, what they are, and have them ask for the Buffalo Sabres parking lot if MCC is full.
All right. Thank you, Patty. Oh, I'll let our guest respond. Go ahead to whomever was ready to respond. I thought I heard someone.
Well, I would just appreciate what a great job you're doing as a parent to sort through this, and how your tale really underscores what I think all of us on the panel have shared today, is that the ability to get timely testing is extremely challenging. And so we're all keeping our eyes open. You're doing a great job finding the option in the Buffalo Sabres parking lot. But we're all paying attention to what possibilities there are, and we'll continue. All of this is evolving, and so we are all paying attention. But I do think your story underscores what we have all said, that in order to enforce this, we need to have better options.
Thank you. Up next on the phone is Anne in Pittsford. Go ahead, Anne. Are you there, Anne?
I'm Pam.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Pam.
Okay. New York State requires that anyone coming from one of the many quarantine states on that list must be in quarantine when they get to New York State for the first 14 days. And I hear about your provisions of how you're going to quarantine people if they test positive, if they're symptomatic. What provisions do you have for quarantining any of the students who arrive at your campus from one of those many quarantine states?
Pam, I'll take that as the as your neighbor, Pam. I'll be happy to take that. We're down the road, as you know, at Nazareth. We have about 200 students right now who are quarantining in the state of New York. We have many at nearby hotels. We have required what the state is requiring, which is a 14-day quarantine period. So any of our out-of-state students, all of them, from these high-risk states, they are quarantining.
Thank you. This is Dina Porterfield from Roberts. Same here at Roberts Wesleyan College. We actually have 10 students that are quarantining currently on campus. We have just over 50 that are out of state, so a much smaller number, and we have reached out to all of them and making sure that they are quarantining in New York State with a plan that we have seen. So, and every student is complying with that is planning to return.
Dr. Douglas.
Yes, we also are moving students in early into our residence halls, and so they can quarantine there. And we anticipate that and we have a much smaller number. The vast majority of our students come from New York State, so we have a much smaller number, so we can easily accommodate them in our set-aside hall.
And Dr. Zupan at Alfred.
Right after this radio show, go down to welcome some of our students that are coming from travel advisory states, 34 total, and the list keeps changing. For example, Delaware got taken off the list, Rhode Island got added earlier this week. So we're housing them on campus from the travel advisory and international locations, but we're also allowing, we have a student, for example, coming from Central Ohio, which is on the travel advisory list. His girlfriend from college lives in the Buffalo area, and they have an extra bedroom with a separate entrance that they're going to have him quarantine there, and then the two of them will come with everybody else from a non-travel advisory state, including New York State, when we have the largest onboarding from August 21st to the 23rd.
Thank you. We're down to our last few minutes, and I think these conversations will continue. We have several set up for next week. I want to acknowledge our appreciation for all of our guests who are here today, because these are not easy conversations. Our guests have been doing a lot of work to try to figure this out. It's evolving constantly. And before we go, I'd like to ask each of you, what would it take for you to decide to shut down campus, on-campus learning? If, let's say, guidance doesn't come from New York State, you need to make that decision on your own. What does that look like for you, Dr. Zupan?
We've set up a health advisory board in conjunction with two other area higher education institutions. It's composed of prominent alums who have run hospital systems, who are epidemiologists, who have expertise, and developing metrics. So what's our isolation? What's our quarantine capacity? At what rate are positive results coming in, not just cumulative, but the rate? Our faculty staff at risk because if they become incapacitated, it limits our ability to deliver our education. So we're going to stay nimble in that regard. It's part of the plan that's posted to our website and with the New York State Department of Health.
Thank you. Dr. Douglas, MCC, what would it take to shut down on-campus learning?
Well, similar to my colleague from Alfred, we have set up a board and executive policy group that works closely with Monroe County Department of Public Health and New York State to make sure we're monitoring all the appropriate data and sharing that so that if it comes to the decision, the difficult decision that it is no longer safe on campus to deliver our content face-to-face, the limited content that we will be, then we will again revert to remote so that all of our instructors are prepared to do that. They have a plan in place if we have to go remote again. We're very much hopeful that that is not the case because New York has learned a very costly lesson, and we are doing a great job of paying attention to those protocols, and we would like to believe that that will continue.
Dr. Porterfield.
Yes, much like our colleagues, we continue to evaluate the situation, look at our metrics, What we're looking at right now is making sure that our Roberts Restart Group, which we have a task force for that, as well as our emergency response team, is looking at those metrics and making sure that they align with New York State and Monroe County. But as you know, in any community, you have to make sure that the well-being of your students, your faculty and staff is first priority. And so we'll be monitoring that as well and making sure that we put everything in line so that we can make a quick adjustment virtually if needed.
And Dr. Paul from Nazareth College.
Very similar to my colleagues, we have a carefully laid out plan and are monitoring all data, both campus and county. We do work hand in hand with the county health department, and that's a very, very important partnership for us because we are linked with community, as we've all been making this point through this call. We also have in our plan, it is not a 0 to 100, you know, decision. We wouldn't just overnight close unless, of course, the data warranted that. But there are some intermediary steps that we can take to take additional precautions if the data warrant. So we are watching this in very close measure and working with the value of everyone involved in our community in mind to do so.
Well, thank you so much to all of our guests. Again, these are not easy conversations. The work that you're doing is difficult, so much to consider, especially with the situation changing day by day. So we appreciate you coming on to share your plans with us. I'm sure these conversations will continue. And listeners, as they mentioned earlier, you can find those plans right on their website. So my thanks to Dr. Beth Paul, president of Nazareth College. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Megan.
Dr. Dina Porterfield, president of Roberts Wesleyan College and Northeastern Seminary. Thank you.
Thank you, Megan.
My thanks to Catherine Douglas, interim president of MCC. Thank you so much.
Absolutely my pleasure. Thank you, Megan.
And Dr. Mark Zupan, president of Alfred University. Thank you so much again.
My pleasure. Stay safe, Megan.
Thank you. Stay safe to all of you as well. Listeners, stay with us. There's more Connections next.